I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. A lot to get to today on the show, but let's start with coral. Yep, coral. It's probably not the first thing that comes to mind when you're thinking about the big news stories of the day, but that's precisely why we want to kick things off talking about it. Like a lot of news about the world's environment, crises affecting coral reefs are almost always overshadowed by more breaking events, but corals are vital to the health of a quarter of the world's marine species. And scientists say right now they're in the midst of a serious global crisis brought on largely by climate change. Mark Eakin runs the federal government's Coral Reef Watch program. And Mark, I understand that what we're looking at is another huge coral bleaching event. What is going on?
Yeah, Marco, what we're looking at is warm temperatures around the globe that are causing widespread bleaching of corals, and a lot of these corals are already dying.
So this is apparently the third major global bleaching event of coral in the last 20 years or so. What exactly is bleaching?
So corals are interesting because you can think of them like the children's game 20 question. Is it an animal, a vegetable, or a mineral? And the answer is all three. The animal has microscopic algae that live inside its tissues, and that helps to build the skeleton that makes the reef. Well, when the temperatures get too high, the photosynthesis in those algae actually runs too fast, and they start leaking out toxic compounds. The coral, out of self-defense, ejects them from their body. That leaves the corals looking white. They're still alive, it's just the tissue is clear and you're seeing the skeleton. But at this point, the coral has lost its main source of food and it's much more susceptible to disease.
So when we're talking a warming in climate change that's causing this bleaching, how much warming are we talking about? 10 degrees? A couple of degrees?
1 or 2 degrees Celsius. So somewhere between, 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit and 3 degrees Fahrenheit. But now this is how warm it is above the normal warmest temperature of the year.
Corals have been around for millions of years, right?
Yes.
So I'm assuming they've encountered all kinds of temperature variations over those millions of years. Why are they so sensitive to what seems like a fairly small temperature change?
Well, it's a matter of rate. See, the corals have adapted to live at the upper end of their temperature range so they can, maximize the conditions in really warm water. But what we've been seeing in recent decades are events that drive temperatures up above their tolerances. And this has been happening repeatedly. And then events like this El Nino can just tip them over the top.
And you're kind of seeing the cause of this as this year's El Nino, the high temperatures?
It is a combination of climate change and El Nino. The bad part about that is we're now in a really strong El Nino, and our climate models are making it look like 2016 may be even worse. We may be looking at losing 5% of the world's reefs permanently from this event.
And I gather there are lots of other threats to coral, right?
There are a lot of local threats, overfishing or destructive fishing practices, runoff of pollutants, habitat destruction. And so at times like this, when the corals are bleached, it's really essential that resource managers in areas look at how they can reduce these other threats so the corals have the best chance of surviving during this event.
So just to play the devil's advocate for a moment, what if we lose, say, a quarter of the world's coral? Remind us why these reefs are important.
About 500 million people, that's billion with a B, are dependent on coral reefs as part of their livelihood and a major source of protein. We have communities all around the world that are protected from major storm waves and from tsunamis by the structures corals build. And many of these tropical regions rely on tourists coming in to dive on the beautiful reefs. If the corals die, the habitat collapses, the fish go away, you don't have anything to attract people for tourism, and you also lose your fisheries.
So give us a look ahead. What do you see? I mean, you think next year could be worse? What about a few years down the line? Any hope for improvement?
There is hope for improvement, but the hope for improvement relies on a strong climate treaty in Paris in December. If we don't get a good climate treaty, corals are not going to have a long, happy future.
Mark Eakin there with the Coral Reef Watch Program at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in Washington. So, bad news for coral. What about some creative solutions to the problem? Michael Webster is a marine scientist and he heads the Coral Reef Alliance. If you take the Great Barrier Reef, the world's largest coral reef, is there any way to defend it from bleaching?
The answer to that is yes. We can't prevent bleaching events when we have a large El Nino like this at a large scale. The warm water temperatures are going to affect the corals, and we will see some bleaching. The question really comes down to, what is the fate of those corals? If the corals themselves are healthy, they're much more likely to survive. And if the conditions on the reef are good for corals, even if the corals die, new corals can arrive on the reef and grow and take their place. And so there's a lot we can do to help make sure that happens.
If this bleaching event can be stemmed, can corals bounce back? And where have you seen that happen?
Corals live in an environment that can be quite harsh, with big storms, with things like bleaching events, with other things that cause the death of corals. And coral reefs have been around for hundreds of millions of years. They're able to come back from times when conditions are unfavorable. We've seen that on reefs around the world, but what's happened in the last few decades is that more and more reefs are not coming back, and that's what's got people particularly concerned.
Have you gone and seen the effects of bleaching firsthand?
When I was a PhD student, I worked in the Bahamas, and it was during the 97-98 El Nino, and the reefs there were hit really bad. Gigantic coral heads, you know, almost the size of small cars, were dying that year. Those coral heads were hundreds, maybe even thousands of years old. It was very sad to see them die in an event like that with widespread bleaching throughout the reefs that I was working on.
And then other species of animals could probably move on because there's nothing there, right?
Yeah, the corals build the reef itself and they make the structure in the same way that trees do in a forest. Once they're gone, much of the habitat for different organisms disappears.
So some species adapt by moving. Is that a viable way that corals might save themselves?
Corals themselves, for the most part, don't move. They're animals that are affixed to the bottom. So an individual coral is not going to move. But when it reproduces, baby corals travel in ocean waters and can go from one place to another. So if you have a reef that's been hit by bleaching and there's very few corals left, the next generation can come from reefs in the area.
And then here's a crazy idea. I think about the way some New York City subway cars get dumped in the ocean and animal habitats develop around those subway cars. Can artificial reefs be designed to create a new habitat for these corals that are under threat?
On small scales, people do that, and particularly in places where there's not a lot of rock structure, you can build something like that, whether it's a sunken ship or a railroad car, and you can get corals to grow on things like that. But coral reefs are large and they're spread all throughout the world. That by itself is not going to be a solution for reefs.
What, though, is the best solution right now?
In the places where people are living near coral reefs, a lot of the things that people are doing, whether that's overfishing the reef or polluting the coastal waters, is stressing out corals. It's causing corals to die, even without those global climate change effects. We can solve those and create a better environment for the corals. At the same time, we really need to get a handle on CO2 problems around the world. With increasing temperatures around the world, with increasing acidification in the ocean, that's going to make it harder and harder for corals to survive.
So what you're saying is if local residents solve all these problems on their own, but the rest of us don't deal with CO2, corals are doomed.
No, I wouldn't put it that way. What I would say is if we can deal with those local problems, we can create a lot of space for corals to grow, for them to adapt to the changing environment. But in the long term, if we do want to continue to have thriving coral reefs for centuries to come, we are eventually going to have to get a handle on CO2. And that's true for coral reefs, and we see it happening quickly on coral reefs because they're so sensitive to things like temperature. But that's also true for pretty much all of our ecosystems on the planet. If we want to continue to get the things that we rely on from these ecosystems, we are going to have to address CO2 emissions as a species.
Marine scientist Michael Webster directs the Coral Reef Alliance. Michael, thanks very much for helping us think this through.
Thank you so much for having me.